Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com. A veces pienso que no tienes valor. Si te perdiera estaría mejor. Si vas a cambiar, nunca lo sabré. Eso es algo que nunca jamás descubriré. Crees tener todo y no tienes nada. Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader and hosts a talk show on WCPT Radio, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, David.
Today, I'd like to talk about the fact that we have two, if not more, elections coming up in Chicago. The first is the November 6th election for county, state, and congressional offices, for which early voting has already begun.
You know, I just learned that. I should get out and vote.
It's only at one site.
Oh.
It expands citywide on October 22nd.
Okay, I should know that, but now I do.
So it's about 2 weeks before November 6th that you could go all over the city.
So October 22nd, did you say?
That is when early voting expands.
Gotcha.
But you don't like to early vote, do you?
I did early vote for many elections, starting, I want to say, with Obama in 2008. And then last time around, I went back to voting day of, because I discovered that so many people were getting into voting early that there were longer lines than if I went day of. So I went day of.
So motivated by the practical. And then there's another election coming up on February 26th, which is the election for municipal offices, namely mayor, clerk, treasurer, and alderman. And there might be a third election coming up. If no one candidate for any office in that election receives a majority vote, the top two vote getters will face off in another election on April 2nd.
Very good for knowing all these dates.
I have the interweb. So it seems to me that these back-to-back elections are going to cause the most confusion and perhaps alienation among Chicagoans.
You answered your question before you asked it.
That any in recent history, and I want to talk about why that might be, and maybe we can help resolve some of that for some of our listeners. But first, before we talk about that, the last time we talked, about the sale of the Reader by Sun-Times Media to a publication called the Chicago Crusader, and you talked about how it was stalled the last time we spoke. But an October 1st press release on the Reader's website shows that the sale was completed.
Yeah, I think they've formally and officially turned over ownership from the people who own the Sun-Times to, it's a new consortium. I don't know what their, do they have a corporate name?
And the mascot, it still says STM Reader.
All right. Well, they haven't probably caught up yet with it. But the new publisher is Tracy Baim. Do you know Tracy?
I've only read that she was a founder of
Windy City.
Windy City Times.
I don't know if she was a founder. I did not know that. Yeah. So she's the publisher. So let's make it happen, man. LZ Higginbottom is one of the owners.
Yes, I'm curious about that. He was one of the investors in the original Sun-Times purchase.
The original Sun-Times purchase of the Reader?
Original purchase of the Sun-Times from Rapports.
Yeah, when the Sun-Times...
Rapports sold the Sun-Times to a consortium that included LZ Higginbottom, who is a Chicago real estate developer.
But Elsie was one of the many investors that Edwin Eisendrath put together, one of the several investors, that, including some unions. And then Leonard Goodman, who also I believe is one of the investors in the Reader. And I don't know who else is. I'm not aware of who else they have there. But there's a group of investors. So I'm looking forward to it. I've had a couple of meetings with the new owners, I want to guess. They're very encouraging to me, very supportive of what I do. So onward and upward.
The new editor-in-chief, Ann Elizabeth Moore.
Not met her yet, but I'll probably meet her in the next week or so.
So it's looking positive.
The Reader is still alive. We're still here. God bless the Reader, man. I've been working for the Reader since 1990, and I've been writing for the Reader since 1984. So keep it going.
Very good. Let's get back to the elections. There are a number of things that we could talk about in terms of the elections, but let's first talk about candidates. In the first election we'll be faced with, the November 6th election, at the top of what some call the ticket is the office of governor. And there are four candidates for governor that voters will have the option.
Can you name all four of them without reading?
Rauner, Pritzker, Cash, what is his last name?
Jackson.
And Sam McCann.
Excellent. And folks, I could tell you, he was not cheating. He did it off the top of his. Sam McCann, state senator from downstate Illinois.
Here's bonus points. Can you name Cash Jackson's original name?
No, but I know there's it's much different than cash, Jackson.
It's on the ballot.
Yeah, it is on the ballot. I wish I knew it because I'd get the bonus points. I could use those bonus points
some other time.
You could turn them in for like free prizes.
And I want to juxtapose that with the fact that in the February 26th municipal election, the last time I checked, which was this morning, there are 18 declared candidates for mayor.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between a declared candidate, as you know, and somebody who will be on the ballot.
That's right. We won't know until they all have their nominating petitions in on November 26th.
Or is that the date, the first day they can turn them in?
That is the day that they're due.
All right.
The point is that we won't know who's actually running for mayor until after the state elections on November 6th. So what's going on right now is, in my mind, that all these mayoral candidates are competing for attention in media outlets, such as The Reader and, you know, your radio program. And so they're sort of sucking up all this media bandwidth, though voters don't have anything to decide about them till February, months from now. Whereas the first election they're going to be faced with is just weeks from now. The voters are faced with county and state and congressional elections before that. So I know that on your radio show for months now, you've been interviewing some mayoral candidates, and I'm not indicting just you about this. I'm just using you as an example. Do you have any sense that media are perhaps spending an inordinate amount of time talking about the mayoral election when there are so many things on the ballot this coming November that you know that people, when they see it, they're going to go, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
You know, who's this?
The most direct answer is no. No, I don't think the media is spending too much time talking about it. I think the mayoral election is very important for many reasons, and I've probably said this to you many times. The mayoral election in Chicago, it's like a laboratory for progressive ideas and how progressive can we go. And this, the most democratic city in the country, one of the most democratic cities in the country. And when there's this basically competing interest between sort of like corporate Democrats and progressive Democrats, for lack of a better term. And so it's very important, in my humble opinion, that we pay attention to what the candidates for mayor of Chicago are saying, because that helps shape sort of the larger democratic or progressive ideology platform planks going forward. Also, there's just colorful, interesting personalities, and I think that in itself drives interest in politics.
I'm really interested in this idea of the corporate versus the progressive Democrats in helping to shape the public perception and the public conversation. Do you think that can inform decisions on the part of the voters in the November 6th election?
I doubt it, because I believe the November 6th election is already over in most people's minds. Most people have decided who they're going to vote for.
In terms of governor.
In terms of governor. That's the most contested race. Then you go down. We can get into it. Attorney general, comptroller, et cetera.
Controller, treasurer, secretary of state,
right,
attorney general.
Is probably the second one that's most important.
There are three candidates competing for each one of them.
At least three, right?
There are three.
Yeah, okay. No, McCann doesn't have a full ticket.
That's right.
So what I'm saying is that if you start with the most important election that's facing us, that would be governor. I think that you could argue, I would argue, that whoever wins that, it shapes the state, shapes the future of Illinois politics, Illinois government, probably for 10 years. Very important. And it just seems to me from the public opinion polls that Pritzker is going to win. I hope that holds. Like, talk about that. I really do believe it's important for the state of Illinois to defeat Bruce Rauner. So I think to a certain degree, Dave, the public has moved on from that election. I believe people will vote. I believe that turnout will be pretty good in this election relative to, let's say, 2014, the last midterm election, you know, midterm being in between presidential elections. But I do believe that most people, and particularly in the Chicago area where people are following the mayor's race, it will not be a distraction. I read a column in the Sun-Times by Laura Washington about a week ago where she was saying this could be a distraction and hurt Pritzker.
The mayoral race?
Laura Washington made an argument similar to the one that you just made, talking about two elections at once is too much for most voters to handle. They can barely handle one. Laura Washington apparently shares your low estimation of the intelligence of the average Chicago voter.
And perhaps yours.
No, I have a higher opinion of this. As I'm about to say, I believe the voters of the city of Chicago are capable of handling not one, not two, but three elections at once. Okay, they're already thinking of 2020. I have great faith in the Chicago voters. You and Laura Washington think less of them than I do. But I do believe that it's possible for voters in the city of Chicago to think about the mayoral election to come and the November election that's upon them. And as proof as a state exhibit A to document the comment I just made, I will give you 1982. And that was before, I think you were living in New York at the time. So you're not
Jersey.
Jersey, okay. 1982 gubernatorial race in the middle of the Reagan recession, key race, Stevenson versus Thompson. It was so close. They had to do a recount of some sorts. And it was tremendous turnout in the city of Chicago, particularly in the black neighborhoods. It was an anti-Reagan vote. Voters were voting for Stevenson over Thompson just because Stevenson had the D next to his name, D as in Democrat. And it was just an anti-Reagan vote. And that just carried over into the 1983 mayoral. I remember it so well. I've always been hoping for a repeat and hasn't happened. But that illustrates to me what can happen when an electorate truly is alive. And they were looking forward. They wanted to vote in the 1982 election to make a statement about Ronald Reagan. And then that energy and enthusiasm carried over, of course, into the 83 mayoral election, which is probably the greatest turnout we've ever had in the city of Chicago.
So it was riding this electoral wave into the next election.
I think there's some parallels now and then. We have an unpopular president, Republican president, Trump now, Reagan then. We have a very contentious mayoral election coming up in 83 with Byrne, Daley, and Harold Washington. And now Lord knows who's going to be on the ballot. It's harder to get on the ballot now than it was in 83 for mayor, by the way.
What about the so-called down-ballot races? And I named some of the offices, the statewide offices, namely comptroller, treasurer, secretary of state, attorney general. You were just talking about the governor's election. Do you care that people might not be informed about, say, what are the positions of the opponents to the Democratic attorney general candidate or the treasurer candidate?
No, I don't care that much about it, to be honest with you, Dave. I feel that that's just the way it goes in Illinois politics. Geeks like me pay attention to stuff like that, you know, the down ballot races. Most people don't. I recognize that. I realize that people like me are kind of freaks. I can remember when my mom was alive, she would call me up and, who do I vote for? You know?
Yeah, I get those.
Because I know the characters and know the less now than before. I find as I get older, I have a harder time retaining all the information. Right at the moment, I'm embarrassed to say, I cannot tell you who the Republican candidate for state controller is. Can you name that person?
No.
Okay. I don't feel so bad.
I have it right here, though.
Oh, what a cheater, man.
Well, I have my ballot.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually printed out, you know, I don't know if voters know that Chicagoans, you can go to chicagoelections.com.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there and on the menu system, you can plug in your name and your address, and it'll give you your entire ballot.
That is correct. And I knew that.
I have mine printed out here, all, what is it, 8 pages.
Good God.
And controller, Republican, Darlene Sanger.
Yeah, Sanger. I knew it was Sanger. As soon as she said it, I knew it. It's running against Susana Mendoza.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to make one last argument for trying to get more issues around this election out there. There is an issue about the state income tax. It's become prominent in the gubernatorial election.
Yeah.
The fact that the state of Illinois has a flat tax, unlike our federal tax, which is graduated depending on one's income. And many state Democrats want it to be graduated, including the candidate for governor, J.B. Pritzker. Coincidentally, you wrote about this in an article in The Reader that appears on October 11th, 2018. It's titled, Why No Paul or Politician Tells the Truth About Raising Taxes. And online it's called, In a Face-Off Against Pritzker, Rauner Tries a Little Reagan-Style Voodoo Economics.
Yeah.
And you talked about this idea that many journalists are talking about. Many other journalists.
Myself included. I tried, to pin him down, yeah.
The thing that specifically you're talking about pinning him down about is what would the brackets be for different tax rates in this graduated income tax? And you wrote, quote, if Pritzker were to come out and state how much he intends to raise tax rates, Rauner would turn it into an attack ad, ominous music playing in the background behind a narrator offering distorted information in a deep, scary voice. So it seems to me I see more reporting on candidates' superficial comments about the tax. I read about Rauner saying, Pritzker's going to raise your taxes. Don't believe him. And quotes about Pritzker saying, we really have to wait till the General Assembly can weigh in on this before we can be definitive. And not so much on any inquiry.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that? For example, journalists could do a what-if analysis of different graduated rates in different states, because many states do have a graduated income tax. So you could take a handful of those and apply their rates to Illinois' population using census or other income data and show that to the voters and say, here's what some of the possibilities for Illinois are. I say all that to ask you how you feel about the reporting on that particular issue.
It's in so many cases, Dave, I'm all over the map with this one. I'm one myself. So when I interviewed, Pritzker hasn't been in the studio since April. I don't think he's doing live radio anymore. And he's so ahead in the polls, he doesn't need us.
Kind of coasting.
Yeah, coasting. What do they call it? Rose Garden strategy, whatever. So he's not doing live radio anymore. At least he's not doing my show. So I remember trying to pin him down on it. So I understand the instinct the reporter has. I believe we should be as transparent as possible. But I also live in a very real world. I know the political ramifications of being honest. And we just talked about this. We were off mic, a conversation we just happened to have about former Governor Richard Ogilvie, who was the leader of instituting the state income tax. Ogilvie argued, he gave a speech where he said it was a compelling reason we have to impose a state income tax where we can raise money to pay for our schools. And he got that through the legislature. It was reinforced by a state constitutional convention. So it's now enshrined in the Constitution as a flat tax. That's the best they could do back in 1970. No progressive tax. And he was promptly voted out of office by the voters. So about 5 minutes ago, I was just complimenting the voters, saying they're far more intelligent than you and Laura Washington think they are. And here's evidence that, in fact, you and Laura Washington are correct. And the voters are not very bright. And the reality is, Dave, I say things like this. I know I would never run for office. I'd never get elected. But we are so stupid in so many ways, so many fundamental ways, so many just obvious ways. And Bruce Rauner, when I see it, he plays into that stupidity. So when I see Bruce Rauner going around acting as though you could just run government without raising taxes, without money, it's so far-fetched. It's so bizarre. It's like the same people who are going to vote for Bruce Rauner are going to be the first people complaining when Foxconn causes tremendous amounts of flooding in Lake County and Northern Illinois, and they want the state to bail them out. They want the state to clean up their water, drain their water.
Externalizing the costs, I believe, is what they call it.
I never heard of that. What does that mean?
When corporations, when private entities have either environmental costs, or in case of a company like Walmart that pays its employees so little that their employees have to go on food stamps, yeah, SNAP benefits, or have, yeah, to get their own health care. Those are costs that the company is incurring, but they're not actually, wow, incurring it. They're externalizing them to government.
Excellent. I'm going to steal that line and use it and never give you any credit.
That's been around for a while.
Oh, it has been. All right. Well, I'm going to give you all the credit anyway.
It's about time you started using it.
It's a great line. It is absolutely true, and it captures exactly what I'm trying to get at. When I came to Chicago, I worked for a guy named John McDermott, and John McDermott was my editor of the Chicago Reporter, and he always said, be objective. Distance yourself from an issue. Concentrate on the issue. Look at the issue and it's all its many ramifications and come to a decision that's like the best decision. And that was like an analytical way of looking at the world as though politics didn't matter. I try to apply that year after year after year. Reader article after reader article, reader article, neighborhood news they did year after year. And then at some point in the 21st century, it dawned on me, the world doesn't work that way. John was like a single individual in a world filled with rapacious pirates. And they lie, they cheat, they distort, they make stuff up. It's gotten worse and worse as I've gotten older. And I look at Illinois right now, I think I told this before we came in here, Bruce Rauner, I have never encountered a Republican governor of Illinois, even a Democrat. I mean, Blagojevich was kind of in this territory, but I've never encountered a Republican governor who just so distorted truth like Rauner does. One day he'll say X. If he gets in trouble, he'll say Y, even if it completely contradicts X. He just levels charges at Democrats that have no relation to reality and tries to personalize everything by saying it's like Michael Madigan's fault. And it's all an attempt to cover up this basic conceit that's completely erroneous that you can run government without paying for government. And so he's sort of advancing the notion, that any tax hike is detrimental to the economy and any tax hike will hurt Illinois, even though he has to know on some intellectual level somewhere, if there's any level of honesty, even inside, you know, that we need more revenue. So how do you go about raising money? Well, you can't just keep taxing middle class and working class people that can't afford to pay for it. You've got to go where the money is. And Illinois is not going where the money is. And the money is with our wealthiest people or our wealthiest institutions. We've talked about this, a transactional tax on LaSalle Street exchanges. apparently they got a law that says you can't do that. I've never understood why we don't do that. I thought that's where the money is. And you know this stuff better than anyone because you've actually studied this transactional tax in the Europe and New York, et cetera, et cetera. So we keep taking off the table avenues to raise the money that we need to fund the government. And so what do we end up with? User fees, tickets, fines, you know.
Casinos.
Even Ron are still resisting reefer. They're going to legalize reefer eventually, and that'll be a form of taxation. But it won't be enough. Whatever it is, it won't be enough.
Incremental.
Yeah, incremental, favorite word. So that's why, so part of me realizes that's the world we live in. Pritzker puts that out. Rauner's going to just turn it into a tactic. Like, the middle class is getting socked. You're getting socked. You're getting crushed. They're so stupid, these ads, but he's going to do it. And so Pritzker said, I'm not doing that. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, sorry, I'm not going to do that. And he's just going to coast to victory. And then I always say this on the radio, the challenge will be for people like me and you to hold him to his promise if he does get elected. I mean, I shouldn't presume he's going to get elected. I guess I just did when I said he was up in the polls. But
unless he's indicted first.
That's Rauner. That is not happening. So that's the reality. The reality is there is no honest, there's no discussion. There's no objectivity. There's no people working together for a common good.
There's just tactics.
Exactly.
Speaking of tactics, I want to switch over back to the mayoral candidates. This ties back into the coming election. One of the people that's declared in the mayoral election that's happening next year is Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. She's running unopposed in her current position as County Board President this November, in addition to being a declared candidate for mayor, even though she hasn't, you know, she hasn't until
November 26th.
To put it in writing, as it were. Add to that, Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza has reportedly fundraised for a mayoral candidacy. She is also running for re-election to her comptroller seat this November. So if she's elected on November 6th, she might immediately turn around and start collecting nominating petition signatures for mayor.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering what you think about the ethicality of asking voters to elect you for one public office while you seek another one.
I'm not tripping on that. It kind of plays off what I just said. And what is that line I always use? In a perfect world, we do X, Y, Z, but we don't live in a perfect world. We live in Chicago. And so I hear you. I hear what you're saying, that it kind of undercuts to some degree the whole credibility of the system. But I don't know. That's politics. The reality is that politicians have personal ambitions. And if your personal ambition is to be mayor of the city of Chicago, that opportunity comes around once in a while. And this is an open seat. So if you're a politician in the city of Chicago and that's your dream, this is probably your best shot you're going to have. I mean, you could argue, who knows what the future's going to bring. But you know how it is, Dave. There's a consolidation in Chicago. There's that mindset we have where, so that's the mayor. At least that's been that way since 1982 when Jane Byrne had to run for re-election. And there was a split, but there's generally that notion of a consolidation. So it's an open seat. The reality is, if that's your dream, this is your shot. So I'm not tripping on that.
It doesn't bother you that a candidate won't even acknowledge that, you know what, voters, if you vote for me, your vote will be wasted, yeah, as it were, because I'm out of here ASAP.
I got to tell you, man, I think of all the things that bother me about our political universe, that is not in the top 10. Would it be in your top 10?
I think it's an important question.
Yeah, but your top 10.
I don't know. I haven't itemized my top 10
right now. What's number one? I think lying about how you fund government would be worse. Pretending that you don't have to fund government would be like dwarfs that. Or how about Donald Trump, you know, saying that his enormous tax break that he gave the wealthiest people in the world is somehow creating jobs, good paying jobs for people in America. Or how about Bruce Rauner and Mayor Rahm Emanuel privately offering untold billions of dollars to Amazon, and but having signed a non-disclosure agreement with Amazon so they can't, we the people do not know how much money they have offered. To me, things like that are just far more bothersome than the fact that candidate Joe is secretly planning to run for mayor, even though candidate Joe is on the ballot. I hear you, but
I think it all falls under the rubric of things that can alienate voters.
Very good. That's true. Voters, I'm going to tell you something, voters. I want you to listen to me now. You got to get tougher. Okay? You guys are such wimps. They just had Kanye West with a MAGA hat on his head visiting with Donald Trump. And their attitude is that'll get black voters to vote for Trump. So, black voters, I know you're too smart to fall for that. So, voters in general, just because Tony Preckwinkle's running for Cook County Board President at the same time she's running for mayor, you got to be able to handle that. All right. Just got to man and woman it up and handle that. All right.
Speaking of having to get tough, this 8-page ballot is rather intimidating, but I must say five or six of the 8 pages are judge votes, voted for Cook County judges. And I don't want to go into that in this interview, but other than tell or advise our listeners that if they really want to try to make an informed decision about judges, that you should go to the website called voteforjudges.org. And somewhere there, you'll find a list of Bar Association recommendations for judges.
Write that down. Voteforjudges.org.
Voteforjudges.org. Or you can just listen back to this podcast.
Okay.
But at the very end, end of my ballot here, Ben, there's 10, count them, 10 referendum questions.
Oh, my God. 10?
Yes, I've got 10 on here.
Wait, I thought they were supposed to limit it to 3.
Well, there are 3 that are created by the Chicago City Council. There are 3 created by the Cook County Board.
Oh, God.
And there's a bunch of others. There's a local one about a health center.
Oh, wait, local one, in other words, in your precinct only. I see.
Or several precincts.
Yeah, I see.
Most of these are advisory.
Uh-huh.
In your perfect world, legislators and other office holders are looking to the electorate to advise them through a referendum on what the best,
you can say that without laughing.
The best legislative.
Mayor Rahm has argued this, by the way.
The best legislative or policy trajectories are, and so they put it on the ballot.
What are some of the questions?
Shall the minimum wage in your municipality match the $13 per hour Cook County minimum wage law for adults over the age of 18?
Is that in Chicago?
That's a county one.
That's county. Okay.
Yeah. So stuff like that. Most of these are advisory, but some are what are called binding referenda.
How many? I just thought it was one.
Well, I just want to distinguish here between the advisory ones and the binding ones. And binding ones are such that if a majority of people vote for it, the majority of the voters who vote in the election vote for it, then it becomes law. And there is one or two such referenda.
Two. What's the other one?
I'm going to talk about them right now.
Right. Sorry. I'm like, what's the other one?
The important thing is that, to me, is that the ballot does not tell you, nor does the Board of Elections website tell you which ones are binding and which ones are advisory. So it's
what a system, man.
It's a shortcoming.
Shortcoming? You're worried about whether, you know, Tony Preckwinkle is running for one. I think that's worse than, you know what? I'm keeping that list. I put that one way ahead of time because that's a valid point. You got to know.
One is ethical. The other one is procedural. Like,
well, no.
Your voters to know what's going on
their
ballot.
I think there's probably an unethical reason why they're keeping you in ignorant. There usually
is. I think you're giving them too much credit myself. It looks to me like it's just an oversight.
Just oversight or ineptitude?
I don't think those are mutually exclusive.
Oversight means, oversight could be a result of their ineptitude.
Yeah.
All right, fine.
So anyway, one of the binding referenda on here is one that asks voters if the mayor of Chicago's office should be term limited to 2 terms. This came about by the efforts of former Governor Pat Quinn, who worked to get this on the ballots in Chicago. And it's reportedly binding, even though it doesn't say it on the ballot.
That's unbelievable. Even I'm stunned. And I see it every year that they don't put that it's binding.
So let's give a short history of this. Quinn gathered signatures and got the minimum amount to get it on the ballot. And then opponents of this effort waged a battle to
Mayor Rahm's people. Just call them for what they are.
Mayor Emanuel never
was his campaign manager.
Never admitted that he was behind it.
It was Mayor Rahm's people.
Anyway, they waged the battle to invalidate some of the signatures so that the effort would not meet the first hurdle of getting onto the ballot enough valid signatures.
Yeah.
Quinn won that battle. Then the Chicago Board of Elections ruled that the initiative violated election regulations and that the petitions that he circulated to get signatures had not just that initiative, but another initiative on it asking whether there should be a elected consumer advocate for the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And so the Board of Elections ruled that because you should only have one issue on a petition, that it was therefore invalid and should not be on the ballot.
Yeah.
But it's on the ballot. Can you tell us what?
Yeah, because I call it the Andrew Arela provision. Did we talk about Andrew Arela on our show? I can't remember.
She ran for the Democratic candidacy for Cook County Assessor.
That is correct, Senator. It's one of my favorite little themes. I was obsessed with it. You could say I'm still obsessed with it. I would put that on my list of things that upset me way more than Tony Preckle running for two offices at the same time. And that is this. Andrew Arela ran for Cook County Assessor in the Democratic primary in March. She was challenged by one of her opponents, Fritz Kagi. And there were a three-person race. Joe Berrios, incumbent. Fritz Kagi, the quote-unquote reformer.
Her nominating petitions were challenged.
Kagi challenged her petitions. At one point, a hearing officer, backed by the Board of Elections, ruled that Kagi had enough valid objections and knocked her off the ballot. At that point, she appealed. In my humble opinion, the Board of Elections should have allowed her name to appear on the ballot while she ran out her appeal, and then if she ultimately lost, they can invalidate all the votes that went for her. But in this case, as in so many others, the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners doesn't listen to me, and they have their own set of standards that they apply, one of which is apparently not telling people the difference between a binding and a
advisory
referendum. So once again, we disagree on some fundamentals of basic democracy. All right, so the Board of Election Commissioners, in his infinite wisdom, decided to put language on a ballot that said, because they'd already printed out the ballot, folks, this is your government in action, that said, if you vote for Andrew Arela, this is the gist of what they said, I don't know if it literally said it, we won't count your vote. So if you're a voter voting early, while Andrew Arela, by the way, is appealing the decision that knocked her off the ballot, and you see that, what are you going to do? Okay, so that is unfair interference in the electoral process to work against the interests of a candidate, Andrew Arela, on behalf of the other two candidates who are in the race, Joe Berrios and Fritz Kagi. Now, I think that's, what's the word, unethical. I think that's undemocratic. I think that's really sleazy. I think that's underhanded. I think that just symbolizes Chicago politics. In the final analysis, Andrew Arela won. She was put back on the ballot, so they had to take the language off. And so,
but meanwhile, all those people who early voted might not have voted for her because of that language.
Thank you, sir. I, to this day, say that Andrew Arela would have won that election and would be our assessor had they not put that language on the ballot. Fritz Kagi's people tell me when I tell them that, Ben, get over it. You know, we outmaneuvered her. We won. Might is right.
And it was a win on a technical basis rather than a popular basis, you know, than the basis of the voters deciding.
More people voted for Fritz Kagi than voted for Andrew Arela. The technical basis is you do not know if that would have been the outcome had that information put on the ballot. So
fast forward,
they're going, okay, we're not going to make the same mistake twice because, you know, oh my God, and we did it for Fritz. So they're not putting the language on the ballot saying, might as well not even vote here.
Right.
There's already so much information on a ballot. Anyway, he said it's 10 pages. We're going to add a little something extra. But pretty soon they're going to put advertisements on the ballot. Hey, go, you know. So that's the Andrew Arela provision, and that's why that information is there. And while this case probably go all the way to the Supreme Court, Pat Quinn says he's going to take it to the Supreme Court.
Quinn had already taken it to Cook County Court and it was thrown out once, but he says he's going to take it farther, which is why the Board of Elections is hedging its bets.
Yeah.
And the Board of Elections has said it will not release the results of any votes on this referendum unless it's ordered to by a court. So we may never know how people voted on it.
I didn't know that last stipulation. Democracy in Chicago, everybody. We're not going to tell you. Oh my God. You're kidding me. They said that?
It says it on the Board of Elections website. Yeah.
I am momentarily stunned.
He looks stunned, folks.
Okay, folks. No, seriously. Okay. Now, in your opinion, what is a greater damage to the credibility of our entire electoral system? The fact that Tony Preckwinkle is running for two offices at the same time, or that the Board of Election Commissioners would keep that basic information from the voters?
I bet you could FOIA it.
Okay, you just ducked the question. That was like Bruce Rauner, J.B. Pritzker-like evasion of a direct question.
Well, Ben,
you had to choose. I gave you a choice.
I'm inviting you to be pragmatic about it, that it probably won't remain a secret. Because it'll be FOIA-able.
Well, let's just say it did remain a secret. Which is worse, the fact that Tony Preckwinkle is running for two positions or the fact that they're concealing. They claim a right. Forget whether the right exists. And by the way, good luck FOIAing for that, because a year worth of litigation. They claim the right. So what is more offensive to the principles of democracy, small d, democracy?
Democracy always has a small d.
Okay. Good point. I just didn't want to confuse any of our listeners. Tony Preckwell running for two offices at the same time, or the fact that they're concealing the outcome of election? Dave Glowatz, do not duck the question.
I don't necessarily agree with the premise that they're concealing the results of an election, because currently it's not a valid proposition. The Board of Elections ruled that that referendum is not a valid proposition, and they're hedging their bets.
I just want to share this with the listeners. I asked Tony Preckwinkle at the last Hideout Show three times why she didn't run for mayor in 2014. She did a better job of ducking and dodging and evading a direct question than young David Glowatz.
I addressed your question.
The most pathetic evasion I've ever seen in my life.
And on that note, Ben, thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome, young man.
Listeners, you know, we always welcome your questions and comments and suggestions for further interviews. Get those to us via Facebook, if you like, or via Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government. And if you're still using email, you can write to us via comment@shygov.com.
Wait, who doesn't use email?
Generation Z.
Oh, they use email, don't they?
I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.